Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And we are still going through the Constitution. We got through a big, meaty part of it, Article 1. Article 1 really lays out the roles and responsibilities of Congress and kind of lays out those same roles and responsibilities for the federal government. And then these next two articles, Article 2 is for the president, and the Article 3 is for the judiciary and how they kind of lay on top of the roles delegated and the powers delegated to the federal government. And we have Paul Venable back with us. So, Paul, welcome back. And he's probably muted because we've already done a sound check. So anyway.
Sorry.
It's okay.
Thank you. Yes, I'm here now.
All right. So we left off going through the criteria for the president, that a president had to be a natural-born citizen, and how so it's really, really clear that for a person to be a natural born citizen, folks, their parents have to be citizens when they're born. Mm-hmm. And if they're not, then they become naturalized with their parents. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes when a baby's a little infant, the baby or the child will be naturalized when the parents become citizens.
Naturalized.
Right.
Yes,
but,
of course.
But I actually weigh in favor of that, that child going through the citizenship understanding, because mm-hmm. sometimes we just don't do that very well. The fact that they have fastballed certain mm-hmm. demographics in America into citizenship, that is an absolute tragedy. And they're doing that deliberately so that it waters down the importance of what a citizen really is and their responsibilities in this constitutional republic. So the best way to change a culture is to inject people who don't understand it. So go ahead.
Jared, in addition to that, we taught this. I remember learning this in school. And I was speaking to a high school audience in Idaho 30 years after I graduated. And I had not, I remember I learned the preamble, and I had not said it for 30 years. Okay. I just hadn't repeated it. And so here's what I did with the class. I said, if you've got a copy of the Constitution, someone check me. And I repeated the preamble, word perfect, having not even remembered it. He had not even said it for 30 years.
Uh-huh.
And I got it right. And I can't say I hadn't read it. Okay. I've read, I taught the Constitution, but I remembered the preamble. And so what it meant was we learned it that well in school when I was in school. I don't even know that they're learning it at all. In fact, I can be pretty sure that they're not.
Right.
So our own citizens, our own natural-born citizens, don't even know the benefit of the Republican system of government that they were born under to protect their rights.
There we go. So, and as a matter of fact, I'll even say this. Folks, before any child that turns to the age of 18 that can vote, it is my harsh or my adamant opinion that every person, when they register the vote, they have to take the oath of a citizen. That way they understand that there is an inseparable responsibility as a citizen to support the Constitution. Therefore, if they vote for something that was actually, and this is why we actually have to clean up our politics. It is paramount that we actually start going after any politician that makes campaign promises of doing something outside the Constitution. In other words, it's one thing to say, you know, we need to have a national health care plan. And then say, if you elect me, we're going to deliver to you a health care plan. The only mechanism that should have been on the table is we will amend the Constitution to deliver you a health care plan. Mm-hmm. That is the only way. You vote for somebody that was willing to actually compromise and violate the Constitution by basically granting powers not delegated, then that's treason. And those people who voted for that should actually lose their citizenship for a period. And when I mean a period, I'm talking about, you know, probably two presidential elections. So that, you know, you understand that, you know, there's a cost to violating your oath. And you do it again the second time, boom. I mean, it's over. You're done.
Yeah. Decide which communist country you want to be deported to, right?
Right. And so, you know, I've been working with the gentleman, before we get into this, I'm working with a gentleman who, Matt, and he's like been the stalwart regarding election integrity. And he's been just running into this brick wall that how a person votes is to be secret. And as far as I'm concerned, no. Every person has to be actually validated, because if we go down this path and we can prove that the candidates and their promises, it was out there that they were going to do something and they had no intention when they got in office and they violated the Constitution and you voted for them, then there needs to be consequences of that. And so the fact is, it's one thing to make it public so that your peers know who, you know, but it is another thing that we have an election board that keeps track of how you voted, because if you're voting to violate the Constitution, you should not be allowed to vote.
Well, that's an interesting perspective. People do have choices about how they vote.
Sure.
And what you're saying is that they need to, what you're proposing is that there's a consequence to voting the wrong way. In other words, you know,
when you take, as a citizen, your responsibility is to take up arms to support that Constitution from enemies, foreign and domestic. So there's no latitude for you to be the enemy of the Constitution and vote for somebody who's actually going to violate it and try to do things to cripple it or destroy it. You cannot use your vote as a weapon to bring down the Constitution. It's one thing if we want to amend the Constitution. That is the process of changing the Constitution. Let's say America really wants to go down the path of socialism. Mm-hmm. The only way to do that is to grant those types of powers. The only way to grant those types of powers is through an amendment. If you empower the parties, then the parties actually ought to be punished as well. In other words, the party actually ought to take a brunt of the pain as well, and either be, you know, what do you want to call it? Not disbanded, but basically censured, so that, you know, there's zero support for that party. I mean, you know, take away some of the access and privileges from the Democrats if they're the ones that are because they've been the champions of the communist agenda.
Yeah.
I mean, we really need to look at, you know, this governing system isn't that complicated, right? What goes into the gas tank goes into the engine.
Sure. Okay.
And so we have to start making sure that we're actually putting the proper fuel in the tank.
GR, I'm going to write that down. What goes into the gas tank goes into the engine.
That's
I really like that.
Okay, so now we're on section two. And I'll let you take off because this, and I'm not going to marry this one up because it's not as critical as the 17th Amendment and so forth, or the 16th. This is the 25th Amendment. Had actually changed this part of the Constitution. So go ahead and read this, and then we'll just kind of keep it in the back of our minds. And when we get to the 25th Amendment, we'll come back and read this so that we can go, okay, now I see what they did. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Here we go. The president shall be commander-in-chief of the Army and Navy of the United States and of the militia of the several states when called into the actual service of the United States. He may require the opinion in writing of the principal officer in each of the executive departments upon any subject relating to the duties of their respective offices. And then he shall have power to grant reprieves and pardons for offenses against the United States, except in cases of impeachment.
Okay, so that's good. We'll skip that part when we get to it.
So we're
actually on in case of the removal of the president.
Okay.
Go up a couple paragraphs, and it's right after the eligibility, no person except a natural born citizen. So we just covered that. Now we're in the in case of removal of a president, where the 25th Amendment is all italicized on our color coded constitution. A couple paragraphs up. Go ahead.
Real quick, there's something I noticed here, and that is the president shall have power to grant receives and pardons for offenses against the United States. Is this a limited pardon power? Because I know that there are not many offenses against the United States in terms of the Constitution.
That's correct. Yes, and it is. It is a limited to those offenses against the United States.
Because what this might suggest, I believe that people believe the president has unlimited pardon power.
Yes, and that's what he's done. Clinton was very, very, I'll just say, took a lot of license.
Liberal.
Yes, very liberal.
Yes.
There you go.
Okay, right. So I didn't want to miss that. It's not highlighted, but I didn't want to miss that because that's a general opinion that the president can, you know, that he can reach down into a state and pardon this person or pardon, and he can't do that. The Constitution only allows him pardons and reprieves against offenses against the United States, and those are limited according to the Constitution.
Yes.
Okay.
And you know what? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to highlight that yellow because that's something that happens. You know, actually, so if you look at some of the people that, well, hold on here. Was it Obama or Clinton that the Weather Underground who committed treason? Technically, those were offenses that would have been offenses against the United States.
I don't think it was Obama because some of his administration, I believe, were part of the Weather Underground. So it may have been before.
Yeah. But my point is that is a pardonable offense because it was against the United States. But I believe that there were some criminal like dealings with drugs and so forth where the federal government does not have. So here's where they actually play with this. They've assumed the ability to create a law, you know, like the war on drugs. And there was one, you know, notorious criminal that was, you know, a drug money laundering type of person. And I believe it was Clinton that let him go. He was in a New York jail. And it was the charges were supposedly against the United States. But though the charges were really not within their authority.
Weird.
You see my point? So
I see your point.
They've assumed a lot of authority over drugs, over all sorts of crime, when we already know, because we covered this in the Kentucky resolutions, that they only have the ability to, you know, dictate the punishment over counterfeiting, over treason, crimes committed on the high seas, felonies and misdemeanors, and as well as crimes committed against the laws of nations. So
sure.
That's it. right. any of these other pardons going against a crime that the federal government has assumed is, you know, that person should never have been in jail, or should it should never have been a federal jail and sentence. Mm-hmm. It should have been a state and unpardonable by the president. But anyway, so let's let's get to the in case of removal.
Okay, except in cases of impeachment.
No. In the case of, go up above section two, right?
Okay.
In case of removal, it's right above the red.
No, there you go.
Okay.
This is modified by Amendment 25.
That's right.
In case of the removal of the president from office, of his death, resignation, or inability to discharge the powers and duties of the said office, the same shall devolve to the vice president. Congress may, by law, provide for the case of removal, death, resignation, or inability, both of the president and the vice president, declaring what officer shall then act as president. And such officer shall act accordingly until the disability be removed or a president shall be elected. This is interesting. So Congress can determine determine who will act as president. It's been left up to the Congress.
Yeah, so the 25th, like I said, the 25th Amendment makes a very significant change to this. So when we get to it, it'll be important, but it's not necessarily, you know, an amendment that creates a violation against the Constitution like the 16th or the 17th Amendments.
Right.
Okay. So I'm not, or the 12th Amendment. You know, because the 12th Amendment was really, really critical as well, because we've seen that we've been violating that so badly that, I mean, most of these administrative amendments like this, they don't get violated. I mean, you know, it's for the most part. Anyways, okay, so the next one actually is highlighted and, you know, heavily marked as really egregious. Go ahead.
Are you talking about the one about...
The president I'll read it. The president shall, at stated times, receive for his services a compensation which shall neither be increased nor diminished during the period for which he shall have been elected, and he shall not receive within that period any other emolument from the United States or any of them.
Ooh. So when the president's term is over, that his salary should be done.
Over. Done. And so he receives a compensation which cannot be increased and shall not receive within that period any other emolument from the United States.
Correct.
So in other words, his security detail for his family. That's an emolument.
Okay.
A Nobel Peace Prize from a foreign nation, $1 million Nobel Peace Prize, is an emolument.
Mm-hmm.
Any presidents obtain a Nobel Peace Prize?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Okay. All right. And so there have been lots of other ways that we have seen presidents actually receive money because of their position. Clinton received millions of dollars from the Chinese Communist Party while he was in office for doing things. They were considered campaign contributions, but doesn't matter. That's the same thing.
Right.
Right.
So, all right, neither. So the other... So the other interesting thing about this, okay, so there are no security, not security, no, what do you call it, pension afterwards.
That is correct. Because they never amended this part of the Constitution, every president that has violated their oath or violates their oath afterwards, like George Herschel Walker Bush, going around the world speaking and talking about and helping organize a new world order.
Right.
you know, the fact that as a former president, he was out there leading the world. That was a direct violation of the, I believe it's the Logan Act. And, and in addition to that, I mean, you know, he was using Air Force One as a traveling machine, or I should say what the former presidents do when they travel around the world. That's an emolument. Yeah. Their pay ends when they leave office because they became a permanent status emolument retirement, you know, I'll just say leech upon the tax paying people of America. Then they now have this ability to be impeached because the impeachment process isn't a punitive throw them in jail. The impeachment process is to remove all emoluments. And we're going to get into that when we get into impeachments.
All right. So here's a question. This is an interesting question. I can understand why the president and his family would be protected. What you're saying is if we're going to do that, we need to amend the Constitution to include that as one of its benefits.
Well, so when we talk about the family, as a matter of fact, when we talk about the campaign and like RFK or whichever Kennedy who didn't get, you know, this Secret Service detail.
Right.
Where is that in the Constitution that they anybody that runs for the presidential office has this, you know, entitlement, this emolument granted them just because they've thrown their hand into the ring to run for president?
Okay.
That's not there. And so it's the same thing with extended family. If you're not living in the White House and if you're not in the, you know, the immediate family is one thing. But this whole, you know, everybody, my, what was it, Billy Carter?
What about Billy Carter?
Jimmy Carter's brother. He used to say, you know, sold Billy beer. And I'm sure he had, you know, an extension of security detail. They literally go well beyond just the immediate family. And, you know, I understand we live in a diametrically opposing world, but we always have. And it's nice to have that extra security, but not at the expense of the taxpayers when it's not in the Constitution.
Okay.
You want to give it to them? Give us an amendment. Don't bypass the Constitution. And when they do those things and they grant these things to themselves, those people who voted for them should be, like we talked about at the beginning of the show, they should actually be punished. We can no longer allow government to continually grant themselves every benefit and every immunity that we're not entitled to have. Okay, so the next one is his oath of office.
Okay, so let's see. Before he entered the execution of his office, he shall take the following oath or affirmation. I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States.
So that's a little bit more than support.
Yes. It is more than support.
Preserve, protect, and defend. That's right. And so this little line that I will faithfully execute the office of the president. That right there, in all honesty, and as a matter of fact, for some reason, this is really not highlighted. And I got to highlight it. Absolutely. Because, okay, so has Obama, let's start with Biden. Has Biden violated his oath of office and failed to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution?
Oh, my goodness, GR, where do you want me to start?
Okay, so when Trump actually signed the USMCA, which violated the Constitution, and that was something that he, you know, was one of his little babies. You know, we're going into break right now, so I'll let you answer this. We'll go through this because, folks, I believe we just got to to highlight this and, you know, and make this reflecting the truth, because we've had a long line of presidents that have violated this. We'll be right back after this promo. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so, Paul, just in case you need to be told about the mute thing.
I was muted.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Sure.
So, going back to this, so Trump, we know Trump did it with the USMCA. Most people would just like to skip over that because, okay, you know, Trump may be their guy. And sometimes people have this blindness towards their guy or gal, right? You know, love right. is, that they say, love is a disease. Anyway, Obama okay. violate his oath of office in failing to protect and preserve. I mean, didn't he give us Obamacare?
Sure he did.
Okay. What about Bush? Bush W.
Well, Bush W. engaged in an aggressive war, and I, even though, did we actually declare war?
Congress actually declare war. So during his tenure, I believe Congress did end up declaring war if there, because there was this big contention between Hillary and him. You know, Hillary, did she actually declare war, support it, or what? I believe that they did, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I will help here. I see the establishment of the Homeland Security Office unconstitutional.
Okay.
Because the Homeland Security is the militia and only the militia. And that is it. And creating another set of laws with the Patriot Act and everything else that came along with what he was doing. In addition, there's so many things that he did that were egregiously violations of the Constitution. But, you know, they kind of paled in comparison to his predecessor, Willie Clinton.
Yes.
Slick Willie Clinton. And, you know, and then I don't want to say they paled, but his father was terrible. George H.W. Bush with the Agenda 21, bringing Agenda 21 and inflicting that upon America?
Oh, he told us. It was time. I remember where I was when I heard him
right.
say we're going to have a new world order.
Right.
Okay.
So Reagan, as hands-off as a guy he was, he still didn't undo anything. He didn't really try to protect things. And as a matter of fact, I can think of two things, you know, allowing or taking an aggressive position towards, I'll just call it the affirmative action and equal rights, because he, you know, he actually was a champion. And in a way, it helped one specific group of people, but that's not, it wasn't within the Constitution to do that.
Okay.
Right? It's just like the Civil Rights Act. You know, I have to remind people that acts are not constitutional. That they are legal law for the District of Columbia and every, you know, territory that the federal government constitutionally possesses, but that's it.
But the other thing, I guess, is laws are supposed to apply equally. So do I understand correctly, we shouldn't be having laws for special groups of people?
Period, right. The ADA is one, mm-hmm. right? I mean, ADA, okay. the civil rights, I mean, and you know, now it's sexual orientation. Come on. Nobody deserves that kind of break. Nobody deserves an elevation by government to be above anybody.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So anyway, and that's going back to Reagan and Calvin Coolidge. As we look back, you know, I can go to Calvin Coolidge and say, you know, Calvin Coolidge actually was a good constitutional president, but he was a progressive. And I tell mm-hmm. people that, you know, he wasn't the constitutional president that most people, you know, want to believe that he was, because he was a champion for the amendment of the labor amendment that would basically give the federal government the authority. But he was following the process.
At least he was the champion.
There you go. I mean, he was out front telling people that, okay, I'm a progressive. I'm, you know, a socialist at best, maybe a communist, but you know, we're going to follow the Constitution under my watch. And for the most part, he was there, but he was a champion for the wrong things. And but every other president from him to today has been, you know, just terrible. Mm-hmm. Even John F. Kennedy. John F. Kennedy may have done some things right, but there was a lot of things that he just didn't do right.
Mm.
See, you know, we look at, because he did get us into the Vietnam conflict. He was the one that
I think he wanted to avoid the Vietnam
conflict. Well, he got us into it. He got us further into it. And when he realized that this, you know, was a bad thing, then he said, okay, I want to get out of that. And I believe that was one of the reasons why he was assassinated. But there were a lot of other things that, you know, that he was doing that, you know, what about the involvement in the Bay of Pigs?
There's some background to that.
I understand that.
He didn't want to do that. From what I understand, the CIA chose to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And when he discovered it, he pulled out. And that was a big one, too. He wanted nothing to do with that.
Right.
What I've read and researched, he wanted nothing to do that, and he didn't want the CIA to run his foreign policy.
Right. And some things he did right with the blockade with Cuba, the Cuba Missile Crisis. So he did some things right, but on the domestic side, he wanted to get back to silver. He had that executive order that was actually going to reestablish the exchange or the support, the direct tie to silver and dollars. But there were other things that he just, you know, he wasn't one, kind of like Reagan. He wasn't one to actually go, hey, you know what? We don't have the authority to be doing this. As the monstrosity of the education system of America, the healthcare mm-hmm. system of America, were growing because the guy before him, Eisenhower, brought those in.
Mm-hmm.
And so they kept on expanding those. And as a matter of fact, he and then Johnson was the one that gave us Medicare. It kept on expanding and expanding.
So Johnson did worse than that. He's the one that gave us the war on poverty, which has decimated the black family.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Well, so if I remember correctly, the welfare state and social services actually did start under Eisenhower, got blown up a little bit more under Kennedy. And then I'll just say Johnson put the steroids on it to where it actually created this, you're right, the destructive culture within black culture.
Right. And speaking of Johnson, all right, this is a guy, a senator, who gave us something called the 501c3.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
Which put the brakes on the First Amendment regarding in multiple ways.
You sure? First Absolutely.
Amendment, religion, freedom of speech. I'm just.
Makes them so makes no law regarding. Absolutely. So, right. Okay. So I've highlighted this because we could go all the way back to, you know, even Lincoln and find atrocities against the Constitution. But got to remember, folks, that it takes, you know, somebody throws, you know, I'll just say in the old days, they would call it a faggot, but a bundle of sticks on the fire, right? Mm-hmm. Then, right. You know, it kind of builds the fire. And so the bonfire of government started really building in 1849, prior to the Civil War, when the Department of Home was established, and they created this monstrosity that never would be retired so that the federal government could take more and more land, take possession of it, and use it for resources of developing their own wealth.
What was the Department of Home?
What we call the Department of Interior today.
Ah, okay. Okay.
Right. At a time when the expanse from sea to shining sea, from the East Coast to the West Coast, was pretty much done. There was just this little swath of land down in, I think, Arizona, New Mexico area that we hadn't settled yet. We finally acquired or paid for the second time with Santana, I think. But anyway, that relationship in paying Mexico twice for the same land was all, you know, it's always interesting to bring up because people like to tell us how, you know, we don't deserve that land. That's not our land and so forth. But, you know, these were treaties that we actually, you know, went to the table and to help somebody gain power anyway. That person had the authority to do it at the time. Nevertheless, let's move on to section two now. And actually, you already read that. So let's read the second paragraph. This is interesting. Go ahead.
All right. He shall have power by and with the advice and consent of the Senate to make treaties, provided 2/3 of the senators present concur, and he shall nominate and by and with the advice and consent of the Senate shall appoint ambassadors, other public ministers and consuls, judges of the Supreme Court, and all other officers of the United States whose appointments are not herein otherwise provided for and which shall be established by law. But the Congress may by law vest the appointment of such inferior officers as they think proper in the president alone, in the courts of law, or in the head departments. It's interesting.
Uh-huh. Okay.
The president shall have power to fill up all vacancies that may happen during the recess of the Senate by granting commissions which shall expire at the end of their next session.
Okay. So one thing I just changed while you were talking is I changed the bad, you know, by and with the advice and consent of the Senate to make treaties from orange to red and yellow, because we've actually have treaties that are so destructive today by subjugating us to foreign courts that they have no authority to do that. And so they're using treaties to basically destroy us in another avenue of destruction. I mean, folks, just imagine the United States is this big, huge train station that, you know, we've got goods and all sorts of things, and our government has all of these trains on these tracks that are all heading in from different directions into this train station. So as you look at it from above, it almost looks like this star that these tracks are just going out, you know, in all these 360 degrees around, you've got a track going in every degree. So as we look at all of the things that they've done, one of the tracks is these treaties. You know, this treaty here to the UN, another track out to the World Health Organization, another track out to NATO, another track out here to the Asian, you know, treaties or alliance. All of these foreign treaties are tracks. Mm-hmm. And my point is that we, as we start looking at all of the avenues, because each track is an avenue, because it's a violation, it's an avenue to destroy us.
Right.
And how many trains does it take to actually go into the heart of America, to the center point of this government railroad station? How many tracks does it take to destroy the government, to destroy America?
Well, you know, if
I'm holding some fingers up.
Okay.
It only takes two.
Two?
It only takes two to create the collision.
All right. Okay.
And that's it. I mean, if you have two trains coming into the station at once, you have a collision, and that collision can be catastrophic.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if we allow the maniacal planners to actually create the you know, a load of really toxic chemicals like they've been doing in decimating America, you know, from Ohio, Michigan, and all these other places. At least right. We forget what they've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, anywho, so go ahead.
Real quick, before I forget, I've got a question.
Sure.
So there are the... Constitution seems to allow for certain executive departments, but doesn't name them, right? So we have, for example, a Department of State and Department of Defense. What's their origin?
Well, so when you look at the executive departments were going to be based upon those constitutional powers. So okay. When they sat down and they said, okay, we're creating this, well, we've put in here this design of executive departments. And so what did they do? They created the State Department for Foreign Relations and Immigration and those things. Then they created the Treasury. Mm-hmm. And then they created the War Department. And that was it. Based on all of the powers within the Constitution, they needed three executive departments. Now, down the road, when they created the, you know, I'll call it the Prohibition Amendment, that could have created a whole new department. And it did.
Yeah, I see. And it did.
And it did. And so when that Prohibition went away, that department should have been struck down.
Mm.
There you go. So now we're ready to jump into Section 3.
Okay.
And this is interesting because this is something that went into play with Trump. Go ahead.
Okay. Section 3. He shall from time to time give to the Congress information of the State of the Union and recommend to their consideration such measures as he shall judge necessary and expedient. He may, on extraordinary occasions, convene both houses or either of them, and in case of disagreement between them with respect to the time of adjournment, he may adjourn them to such time as he think proper. He shall receive ambassadors and other public ministers. He shall take care that the laws be faithfully executed, and shall commission all the officers of the United States.
Okay, so the very beginning of this, if you remember the fiasco that Pelosi was trying to play with Trump, it says he shall from time to time give to Congress information of the State of the Union and recommend to their consideration such measures as he shall judge necessary and expedient, semicolon.
Right.
And then now they go into the recessing and adjournment of the houses. He can, in case of disagreement between them with respect to time and adjournment, he may adjourn them to such time as he shall think proper. Now, Lincoln kind of did this.
Mm-hmm.
that, you know, he kind of utilized that one little thing when he actually adjourned, you know, the Congress. But he did that after the South seceded. Mm-hmm. And without any real threat, he did that so that he could unconstitutionally seize power by martial law, by trying to invoke martial law. But the reality was that he needed Congress to call forth the militia.
So he adjourned Congress, and then he attempted something that he didn't have the constitutional authority to do.
Correct. Because you can't declare martial law until you federalize the militia, and then you can declare martial law to where you deploy them. You can't just say, oh, I'm calling martial law for the entire United States. You can't do that. It was that was very well defined in the Virginia ratification debates, that the United States could not be locked into martial law, that it could only be martial law could only be declared where the militia has been deployed and while they're deployed. That's it.
So in our current way we are right now, martial law isn't even possible.
It isn't impossible, correct. Because they're not using the militia. They've actually transformed the militia into a federal ready reserve for an unconstitutional army and an unconstitutional air force.
An unconstitutional space force.
Well, yeah. So actually, the space force is a strategic, which should actually be a sub-department or subdivision of the Navy, just like the Marine Corps. It's a department of the Navy. So you'd have these, and the Air Force, there could be a strategic, you know, there is a strategic role for the Air Force, like, you know, STRATCOM and some of these other things. And so I can see that all falling underneath the Navy as a department of the Navy.
Sure.
But the Army forces, no, I'm sorry.
Yes.
You know, that's the militia. They're not to be deployed. Any deployed force is to be the Marine Corps. That's you got to remember that the framers had no envision of fighting wars on foreign soils. They just were not going to commit American life to nations fighting amongst each other, regardless of how big they were.
And, you know, that mindset lasted all the way up to
the Progressive Era.
The Progressive Era, which was Woodrow Wilson.
Actually, Teddy Roosevelt.
Oh, up to Teddy Roosevelt?
Is that when it started? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. McKinley was kind of a progressive, but he wasn't progressive enough. I mean, he was killed by a communist who was claimed to be an anarchist, but anyway. Anyway, so that seated Teddy, who was a very aggressive progressive.
Right.
And assuming powers and so forth. So anyway, so that wraps up Section 3. Now we got 5 minutes, and we can now jump into Article 3. Now, folks, this is the forming and jurisdiction of the federal courts. There was a lot of angst by the states in, you know, what they didn't like about Article 3, Section 2, and we'll get to that. But let's go ahead and go through Section 1. It's a short part.
Okay. The judicial power of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court and in such inferior courts as the Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. The judges, both of the supreme and inferior courts, shall hold their offices during good behavior and shall at stated times receive for their services a compensation which shall not be diminished during their continuance in office.
So what is good behavior?
I would imagine it is fidelity to the Constitution.
You know, that would be the number one thing. Absolutely. Okay. Because they have to take an oath, and we'll get to that in Article 6.
Mm-hmm. So let me run by something here. And you'll hear it all the time, even the Supreme Court justices repeat it, you know, I'm here for life. No, they're not. This, that is not in the Constitution. But no one refers to this term during good behavior. I almost never hear it in the public discourse.
Well, that's because our jurists, our courts, our judges have created a paradigm that they're above the law, that regardless of what they do, they are untouchable. And this is the wrong paradigm, folks. And as a matter of fact, I might as well say it now, because I don't think I mentioned that my latest article is out for kind of review by the select group. And Paul, you've actually had that. And so, in other words, it's my penultimate draft. And so for those people who don't know what penultimate means, it's the one before the last. In other words, it's not my last draft, but it's my penultimate draft. And it's far enough along that I can, you know, put it out into the hands of people to say, what do you think? And what are your thoughts on this? Because this particular article dives into details of two very specific cases, the Baker v. Carr and the Reynolds v. Sims, and how the jurists, they're so full of themselves that they believe they're gods. They believe that they have full control to interpret and decide what the Constitution means, and they don't have that authority.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, you did mention it. I think you mentioned it on one of the other shows.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It's been Friday.
All right.
That this is out.
And that it's out. And so.
Awesome, awesome document.
So Paul has got it, and it's a long read, but it's academic, and there's probably a few things I'd like to add to it. I'd probably like to add some more state definitions of the counties, you know, and talk about how, you know, at the framing of the nation, the counties were integral. As a matter of fact, mm-hmm. I think I mentioned that the ratification debates were done by the counties. In other words, when the state actually ratified the Constitution, they had counties bring forth delegates to actually debate the Constitution and then, you know, vote on whether they would ratify or not.
Right.
In other words, it wasn't just the population center that got away with it. Every county had representation.
Mm-hmm.
And in today's forum, you may only have representation by legislative district, which means you may actually not have any representation out of your county.
So what happens, and, you know, this happens throughout states, and in legislative districts, they gerrymander these districts. So let's say you got so many liberal neighborhoods here and then maybe a conservative neighborhood over here, and the conservative neighborhood never gets represented. The conservative county never gets represented. Okay? I've had people tell me they've never even seen their congressman. You know what I mean?
Yes.
That's
yes.
The way it's been.
Right.
How should I say? Or as you say, gerrymandered?
Yeah. Well, it's the way we've accepted the power brokers' decisions and how to rule us. We have to start stopping. We have to stop them and start standing up and demanding representation, because we already covered the 30,000 and the necessity of what they're supposed to represent. We really don't have any more time. Paul, please be with
us
tomorrow. You bet. And thank you so much for joining us. Folks, as we move through Article 3, I guarantee you, your jaw is going to drop when you realize the limitations that the federal government really has, and it'll help open your eyes in some of the what we would conceive as solutions or actual threats. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.